In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents A Voice of Truth and Inspiration, broadcasting on frequencies of love, laughter, and information, illuminating new paths for new directions as we, as one, strive for higher and higher planes of existence and a better understanding of ourselves and the world in which we live. Always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. This is Life Changes with Filippo. And now your host, our MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. I'm excited about today's show because today we have two special guests who are both at the top of their field, actually at the top of a couple different fields. And we'll be talking about that because they're both excellent. And our first guest, Tofu Morrison, who wrote the book Settle for Excellence, will tell us exactly what that means. But I have to say that I did something fun last week, and that is to go see and hear Tofu Morrison and John Heffron do a workshop, which is called Funny is Money. And my understanding is that they're going to be doing these more and more throughout the country. And I'm recommending it. And this is one of the things that I got out of it was, as I was sitting there in the audience watching John, who of course is an excellent presenter, do his thing. And I was, I was listening, I was comfortable, I was happy to be there and all that. And then one of the people in the workshop, who were there to learn, got up. And then all of a sudden I noticed I wasn't comfortable anymore. And I wasn't as happy. And I'm starting to think like, oh no, what's this person going to say? Or did that person have to move that way? And why is that person doing that? And oh gosh, I'm uncomfortable. And how long is this person going to go on? And all of a sudden I'm not interested anymore. And then John would get back up on stage and then I'd be comfortable and happy again and thinking, yeah, he's making a good point. And then Tofu would get up on stage and he'd talk about what the guy in the workshop did or what the girl in the workshop did and how they could do it better. And it's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm comfortable and I'm happy again. And I'm thinking, of course, that's what those people there in the workshop are there to learn, is how to be better presenters. But Tofu is a professional. And he does this and he knows what he's doing and he's studied it. And of course, John is a professional and he studied this and he knows what he's doing. And in Topher's case, he teaches other people how to do this. So what am I getting at? I'm getting at the professional who stood up there on stage knew, as Tofu did, knew how to take the audience along, how to guide them. He'd speed up the pace, he'd slow it down, he'd move to this side, he'd keep eye contact, and he'd do all these things to make me comfortable, to help me go on a journey with him. And that's what he does, along with many other things. However, when the non-professional got up on stage, then all of a sudden, because of the things that they did that they didn't know they were doing, were distracting to me, took me out of my center. I wasn't comfortable because I didn't know if they would lead me to a place that I wanted to go to, or I didn't trust them because of the way they moved or the way they looked or the way they acted or because they were nervous. Because they were non-professionals at this. And so it reminded me, well, first of all, I thought, wow, this is a class everybody that's a presenter really needs to take. On the other hand, it reminded me of an argument I had with a friend recently that I really enjoyed. For some reason, my friend chose to have what I thought was a silly argument. It was silly because I agreed with his points. But what I enjoyed about the argument was listening to him argue. Like he never raised his voice, even though he was passionate about what he was talking about and thought I was disagreeing with him. For some reason, somebody told him I disagreed, or I don't know why he thought that, but he never raised his voice. He always stated his point from his perspective, how it makes him feel or what his understanding is. And the way he spoke about what he was so passionately defending in his mind was so brilliant. And I thought, wow, what a great way to have an argument. I never felt offended. I never felt uncomfortable. I just sat there and listened. And then at the end I said, you know, I agreed with you to begin with, but I'm glad this happened because I got to watch you argue in a way that I wish everybody could argue with their friends or colleagues or coworkers or anybody. But then I thought, well, this friend of mine is a professional at arguing. I mean, he's studied psychology and he's been through several psychological workshops of his own and had therapy, and he's also very evolved. And I thought, wow, just like a presenter could be taught by Topher, for example, how to present, we could be taught how to argue. We could be taught how to relate with each other. And maybe not everybody is going to go through learning how to present or learning how to argue or relate. Maybe now's not the time, or maybe that's not realistic for everybody. But for those of us who know that some people haven't had that training, maybe we can give them a little leeway. And that's one of the things I got out of it. It's like, okay, well, Topher is a professional and he got me. And John is a professional and he got me, and I got him. And we had a great time just listening to them and learning from them, right? But when the other people came up to realize, okay, these people are not professional, all of a sudden when this came to my mind, it's like, well, give them a little leeway. And as I started to give them leeway, then I started to get into it, and it kind of got funny because then I was able to see people's personalities. So as I was starting to relate with the people in the class, getting up there and just enjoying their personality as opposed to saying, oh God, they're not good at this. Yes, Topher helped make them better, and that's great. But in the meantime, I still had to endure those 3 minutes or however long of their awkwardness. Well, when I finally got into the moment and said, well, wait a minute, this is just how they are right now. Now they're going to get better, but right now they're like this. Then I was able to enjoy it, allow it, and flow with it. And so I thought, well, how great would it be if we could realize that, oh, this friend, this colleague, this person isn't a great arguer or doesn't have the skills in relating with people. Maybe we can enjoy them for where they are right now. And speaking of right now it's time for a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have Topher on, and a little later in the show, John. And I'm so excited. I can't wait. We'll be back right after this.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWays ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWays ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. An ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWays Water Systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWays Water Systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook, and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
We are back. I am indeed Filippo, and our guest today is Topher Morrison. Our guest is, well, some of you might be familiar with him because he is the author of the best-selling book, Stop Chasing Perfection and Settle for Excellence. He is also featured in 2 hit movies, The Compass and Riches, movies that chronicle the positive and negative experiences one receives when following their dreams and pursuing wealth. But when, but what you may not know about Topher is that he is often referred to as the secret weapon for national, multinational CEOs, politicians, Olympic athletes, and entrepreneurs who seek to increase their ability to present with confidence and influence the masses. Today, we're going to talk about his book, Stop Chasing Perfection and Settle for Excellence, as well as his new workshop, Funny is Money. Welcome, Topher Morrison, on the show.
Thank you, Filippo. How are you today, my friend?
I am great. I'm great because you're on and we're having a great time already.
Well, we are, and I got to tell you, I'm glad I'm on, and I'm glad that you still talk to me since the last time I was scheduled to be on your show. I was a moron, and I completely forgot about the show and didn't set the alarm, and I left you at the altar for an hour, and I felt bad about it, and what a testimony to how cool of a person you are to do your show without me and yet still be my friend. So I just want to publicly announce how much I appreciate you and how terribly sorry I am that I missed the last one, and I'm glad I'm on now.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I did tell you I wasn't even going to mention it, and I didn't, but you did, and thank you for that. You know what?
Yeah, I have to confess.
You weren't a moron. We don't need to go there. And things do happen, and here you are. Well, this is a testament to the kind of person that you are that you would mention that and publicly say that. So but I came to your workshop and I enjoyed it. And what do you think about some of the things I got out of it?
That was really kind of cool to be able to hear what you pulled away from the program, you know, completely like in a raw, unscripted manner, because we hadn't had time to really even catch up since the workshop. So I was just kind of sitting back going, wow, that's kind of cool. It was interesting. I was experiencing that. So, but I got to tell you, now I'm a little bit nervous, because what I got from that was that, you know, we should really take, you know, give some leeway to the people who aren't the professionals. But now I'm realizing, holy crap, now he's not going to give me any leeway on this radio interview. And I should better deliver now.
You know, actually, we're laughing already, and one of the things I didn't know about you, of course, I came to know you first from the book, and we'll talk about that in a second, but one of the things I didn't know about you was that you are so funny, and I guess that's something that most people knew. I didn't.
Born from my looks, I figured, you know, I might as well run with it. So if I'm funny looking, I might as well speak in a funny way, I guess. So I do my best. Every once in a while, I'll tell a joke and it'll bomb completely. But hey, you know what? It's power for the course. I figure if you don't take a chance and tell up a joke, then you're never going to know what works and what doesn't work. So I do like to laugh, like to have a good time, especially when people are, you know, at an event. The way I figure it, if they're not laughing, at least once a minute, once every other minute, they're probably going to get bored. We live in a fairly short attention span society. I always tell people, I say, we've got the attention span of about 144 characters now, thanks to Twitter.
Well, you're not only an author, I see you're also a fisherman. You're fishing for compliments there, born the way you look. Of course, we all know you're a handsome man, and your jokes land, all except one which you knew wouldn't, but you tell anyway because you enjoy it, and more power to you. But I have to ask you, is that you? I watched several videos of you. Is that you in one of the videos where you did this Black Swan impersonation?
That is me. A lot of people think it's not. He's referring to a video on YouTube. If you guys ever go to YouTube, you can just type Topher Morrison Black Swan and you can be thoroughly traumatized by watching the video. But yeah, that's actually me. It was 2.5 hours worth of makeup to look like a very bizarre transgender Black Swan.
Well, I enjoyed that, and I think I'm going to enjoy it even more now when I go back and say, wow, that's really him, because I wasn't sure. So we're ahead of ourselves. Let's talk about Settle for Excellence. You know, I have to tell you that when I first got the book, I'm thinking, what does that mean? And of course, it was a couple chapters in when I thought, oh, how clever is that? So we can entice people to go and get the book. Could you help us with what Settle for Excellence really means?
Sure. Well, you know what? The interesting thing, this is just one man's opinion. I don't know. Though I always say that, as a speaker, we have to just speak our truth, and then the audience has to keep finding the right authors and the right speakers to where it makes sense for them. So hopefully this will resonate with some of your listeners here, is that my belief is that most people in life, they have way too high of standards. And it's interesting, if you talk to like a lot of motivational speakers, they say that if you want to get better in life and you want to make a lot more money, you got to raise your standards for what's acceptable. And I'm the exact opposite. I'm thinking, you know what, if anything, I think we need to lower our standards, because most people nowadays, they have this standard for acceptable living, which is unrealistic. You know, they have this standard that says, I can only be happy if I've got the BMW or the Mercedes. I can only be happy if I've got the million-dollar home. I can only be happy if I'm making a certain amount of money. And they have this ideal about what is a perfect life for them. You know, it includes the two kids, the dog, the white picket fence, or the penthouse, whatever it might be. And so many people in life have gotten to a place where they've set this ideal up, probably maybe, I guess, influenced by a lot of the media, where it's so unobtainable they now give up. And all of a sudden, because they can't get it, and we tend to be a little bit of an all-or-nothing creature, right? So it's like one of those things where they say, well, if I can't have it all, I don't want it at all. And what happens is, I think a lot of people in society nowadays have set these standards that are so high, they can't achieve them. And as a result, they're miserable, and they're depressed. I mean, if you look at how many people are taking antidepressants nowadays, it's ridiculous. It's like 30% of the population in America now, I've heard, is being medicated with antidepressants. That's wrong. We live in a society where it's better than ever in terms of technology and convenience and lifestyles, but yet 30% plus are depressed. I think it's because we have such high standards that we end up feeling like a failure all the time. So my thing is, hey, lower your standards from something of perfection to something of excellence. Which, by the way, a lot of people, if they can't get perfect, then they just settle for mediocrity, and I'm not about that either. So I'm saying, you know what? There's got to be a range somewhere in between perfect and mediocre, and I call that word excellence. And if we set our standards there, we can have a pretty good life, we can be happy, we can smile, and we can make a good living, and overall, we don't need those kind of meds.
You know, Topher, I so like what you're saying there and saying in the book, and it reminded me while reading it that when I used to work for IBM, there were a lot of people that I thought were inflated by the system, that were made managers who really weren't managers, and who were made vice presidents who really shouldn't have been there, but either for lack of this or because they sucked up to so-and-so or whatever, they've been there so long, who knows. But they were in these places where they were miserable people doing something that they didn't know what they were doing, but they wanted that title or whatever it was. And then when IBM had these major layoffs, then they all, and they had to leave the company, they were forced to leave. Then when you saw them a year later or two later, after the shock of, oh my God, I'm without a job and I'm not vice president or I'm not manager, whatever, then you saw them as normal people. Some of them went back to being moms. Some of them, you know, opened up their own little mom and pop store. And you saw this like, well, this is who you were all the time. But because we thought we were supposed to or had to, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know what's funny is, and it's amazing how some people will get conditioned by that environment. I see it a lot just in the personal development world, and it's kind of funny because I think sometimes when people haven't taken the time to maybe even read my book, Settle for Excellence, or get to know me on a one-on-one, they think that I'm anti-personal development because I've pissed a lot of people off in the industry, because I tell people a lot, I say, you know what, one of the best ways to feel like crap about yourself is to go get a new personal development book, because so many of these books out there, they're trying to encourage this ideal of, you know, how to become a millionaire in 90 days and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, if they realize what was their life before they got into the personal development, they realized they were actually pretty happy. It wasn't until they got into personal development they realized, oh, I'm screwed up, I'm messed up, I'm inferior. And I'm like, no, that's not the way it is at all. You've actually got a great life, and accept that. You know, one of my favorite stories of it. Do you got time for a story, Filippo?
Please.
One of my favorite examples of this is a guy that is one of my idols. He's my brother. My brother ended up working in maintenance for Nordstrom's clothing store, and he was like their maintenance manager, had a great job. And then one time got the entrepreneurial bug and decided to buy this secondhand, an antique store, basically. And he worked at this secondhand store. He bought it from the owners and worked, you know, 12, 14, 16-hour days, 6 days a week, 7 days a week, and just really put his heart and his soul in this thing because he wanted to, you know, build up this business and make his millions with this store. And it was funny because he was, I think it was his youngest son's fifth birthday. He had two boys and a girl. And his youngest boy was just turning five. They asked him what he wanted to do. He said he wanted to go camping. And my brother was sitting in this hammock looking at his kid, 5 years old, his daughter, 7 years old, and his oldest son, 9 years old. And he looked at him, and he never remembered them growing up.
Oh.
And it was like this epiphany for him that it was like, I'm working my ass off so hard to do this thing that society says we have to do, which is make all this money, be this entrepreneur, and really be successful. And he goes, and I don't remember my kids growing up. And he went home that day, well, that weekend, went home that week, sold his business, and took a job working at a hardware store within walking distance of his house so he could walk home and have lunch with his kids. Is that awesome?
Wow.
I mean, you want to talk about heroes of the day. I mean, there's a guy who's got his values in order, and he knows what's important. And to just walk away from all that, and now he works at a hardware store. He's a clerk at a hardware store. Has a great job. There's no stress. Loves it. Never going to make his million. But you know what? He's raising three awesome kids. And I think there's a guy who's got it figured out, if you ask me.
Wow. What a great story.
Yeah, I wish I was smart enough to figure that out.
Well, you don't have kids yet. Maybe that's the thing.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I guess we tend to be a little bit more values conscious when we have those.
But seriously, I know you touch on this, but for those of us who don't have kids, I mean, really, finding that place. I know you get into meditation in the book and some self-hypnosis and stuff like that, and finding the spaces between the words. That's kind of what you're talking about, in a sense, if I can extrapolate from your brother's story, is those spaces in between our life that we call life, rather, right?
Yeah. Yeah, or the spaces, if you're looking at careers, it's the spaces between the paycheck, you know, and what are you doing in between those paychecks to enjoy your life, or are you just working for the next paycheck, so to speak? Yeah, it's amazing how we can just kind of lose sight of all of that and just not realize what's important. You know, you talked about the book, about the meditation and stuff. It's so funny. You know, when I travel around and I do my seminars, I have this one question I've always asked people in my audience, Filippo, and I always ask them, I say, you know, if because the biggest objection to get people to meditate or do some sort of internal relaxation every single day is they say, I'm too busy. Oh, Filippo, man, I'd love to meditate, but how am I going to find the time? I already have a full-time job, plus I got the kids looking at me, plus I got this book. And they always come with all these excuses, and I always ask people in my seminars, they say, listen, I go, you know, how many here have somebody in your life that you would do anything for? I mean, you love them so much that if they called you in the middle of the night, you'd drag your butt out of bed and go help them. Or if they called you in the middle of the day, doesn't matter if you're at work, if it's an emergency, bam, you're taking the rest of the day off, you're going to go help that person out. And you know what's funny is not everybody in the audience will ever be able to raise their hand for that. I think it's a select few of people that are lucky enough to have somebody that they love that much that they would do something like that for. And then in a pause of silence, I always ask him this question. I say, now, wouldn't it be great if the person that you were just thinking of right now was yourself? Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, Filippo, in the 15-plus years I've been asking audiences that question, not one person has ever been thinking of themselves when I phrase it up that way. They're always thinking about their spouse or their kids or their mom or their dad or something like that, and they never think about themselves. And I'm thinking, man, that's kind of messed up. When in our society, we've realized that we've devalued ourselves so much that we don't even think we're worth taking time out of the day for us. But yet, if our friend needs time out of the day, sure, what you need. Seems a little bit counterintuitive.
Well, that's actually a really great example. And you know, even for somebody else, this seems counterintuitive too. But I know you touch on this in some of the things that you talk about. If we were to meditate, we would show up differently. It's kind of like you're saying, you know, looking for excellence as opposed to perfection. You're asking us to show up differently. And if we really care about somebody else, even if it's not us, and we want to do the best for them, if we showed up differently.
Yeah. You know, I always tell people, I say that, I think that showing up, by the way, begins with a lack of stress. And then when you're not stressed out as much, you can be more present with people. You can be more giving. You can be more understanding. You can give them that leeway that you were talking about earlier in the introduction, right? And the thing is, you know, when you look at stress, one of my favorite definitions of stress, this is the Topher Morrison definition of stress, is that stress is nothing more than the byproduct of thinking that your life is more important than it really is. You know, you think about, you know, your finances. The only reason people stress out about their money is because they think it's more important than it really is. Or they stress out about the relationship is because they think it's more important than it really is. Now, keep in mind, while I'm speaking so prophetically here, I'm total a hypocrite, by the way, because I'll be the first person to probably get stressed out about money or stressed out about my relationship. Mm-hmm. But just because I'm guilty of doing the same things doesn't mean that it's still not true. And if we can gain that perspective to where we're not stressed out and we don't think those things are as important as we usually like to think they are, the stress virtually disappears. And that's why I always tell people, I say, look, when you find time to meditate during the day, you're sending a message out to the universe that all of this stuff that's going on, it's not as important as people think it is. Mm. And once you set all that stuff aside, you connect with yourself for just 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is, all of a sudden, it sets this unconscious wheel in motion to where you don't have to get as stressed out as much about all of the things that are going on in your life because you get back in touch with what is really important. At least that's what I think. I should take my advice more often.
Well, you know, and there you go. That's I was just about to say that's one of the things that I liked about you. And when I first saw you speak live, I thought, wow, not only did you kind of not make fun of yourself, but you teased about yourself, which made us all more comfortable because you stand up there, you look the way you look, you got a perfect body and you present perfectly and I'm sure people in the class will think, I'll never look like that or I'll never be like that. But what you did was you put them at ease and then you said that you had things to learn and you were learning too. And that's what I liked, one of the things that I liked the most, because you showed how people in the 80s used to do it this way. People, you know, maybe in the 90s used to do it this way. Today we're doing it this way, but it's going to change and you're learning as well. But this is what I can share with you while I'm learning it. That's what I got from you.
Yeah. Well, you know what the thing is, I guess I've been in this business long enough to see enough people in this business that are absolute total hypocrites and total fake. The one thing, and maybe it's an aversion on my part, I'm not too sure. I'm sure Freud would have a heyday with it. But I just don't want to be that guy that gets up on stage and tries to act like his life is perfect and tries to act like he's got it all figured out when the fact of the matter is, and there's probably not too many people out there that admit this, at least authors and speakers, but if you want to meet somebody who's got issues, talk to a motivational speaker. They probably have more issues than just about anybody out there, maybe second only to priests and pastors and ministers. You know, I mean, the fact is, we're all kind of jacked up a little bit, and I just would much rather not have a pedestal fall off of because I don't like falling. So I figure the more I can, and you talked about making fun of myself. I call it just making real of myself to where people do get that, you know, I don't have much. You know, I've got one thing figured out in life, and that's platform skills. There's probably not too many people who can coach somebody to have better speaking skills out there than I can. But any other area of life, you might not want to take my advice because everything else just might be a little bit less polished, shall we say.
Well, there you go, and that just shows who you are, and to me, that means a lot, and I resonate with everything you just said there. When we come back from our break in a few minutes, we're going to be joined by John Heffron, who you're doing a workshop with called Funny is Money, but before we do that, we got a couple more minutes here, and I'm just wondering if there's anything else you want to share with us about Settle for Excellence, and of course, we want to encourage people to go to Topher Morrison, that's TopherMorrison.com, where you can learn more about Topher and get the book that we're talking about.
You know what? If they want, they can even go to just settleforexcellence.com because they've kind of heard that phrase a couple of times. Okay. And they can even download a free chapter as well.
Oh, nice. Oh, very cool. Yeah. Okay, so what else would you like to share about the book before we go on your other workshop?
It is a multifaceted book which can serve so many purposes. So once you've read it, you can take the book and put it under a crooked leg for a table and it'll fix that. If you're really short and you need a little, about 3/4 of an inch shorter than you need to be, you can stand on it as a really small step stool. It's really an amazing book. And for the value, for the $19.95, I think we have it on sale, you can't beat it. It just serves so many functions and purposes beyond just reading.
Okay. All right. Well, you're not supposed
not what you were
to
expecting,
have,
huh?
You're not supposed to have me laughing so much that you take me off of topic here. All right. So I guess it's up to me to tell them. No, actually, one thing that I'd like to leave everybody with that I got out of the book was about the energy shot. Is that something you can do in about a minute and a half?
Yeah, dude, sure. Yeah, no problem. Minute and a half. Timey. Here we go. So greatest way to get more energy in your life, faster than a Red Bull or a five-hour energy shot, is to realize that energy can come from three things in your life. Number one, a realization that incompletions drain energy from your body. So the more things you've got going on in your life that are incomplete, the less energy you're going to have. The second thing to realize is that the more you get things complete in your life, the more energy you're going to have. So everything in life, depending upon if you're looking for more energy, should be filtered around how can I get my stuff done. And there's really three ways to get things done. And this is the third point. Three ways to get things done. Number one, schedule a time to do it. That does not mean procrastinate, by the way. It means actually honoring your word and doing it when you say you're going to do it. The second thing is just to get it done, and just get it done right then and there. And if you don't have time to do it immediately, schedule the time. And then the third one, which is my favorite, is declare it done without it even getting done. You know, the most of the time, if you look at what people have on their list of things to do, most of them are unessential and not necessary. But they've got them as something to do. It's creeping in the back of their brain, in their mind, all the time, and it's always there, and they always feel like it's incomplete. And if they would just sit there and go, you know what, I'm never going to read that stupid magazine anyway, bin it, all of a sudden it's complete without ever having to do anything with it anyway. So,
We either lost you or you stopped at exactly a minute and 30. Maybe we lost you. We'll have to get you back. But how perfect was that? Actually, I one of the things that I learned most.
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Were you done?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect timing. Now, actually, that is so cool that you put that into perspective like that, and we're able to do it in a minute and a half. You're going to hang with us with John on, right?
Yeah, sure. I don't know if he's on the line yet or not. You know, I mean, those comedians, you know, they're hard to find, but yeah, I think so.
we're gonna cut to a break real quick, just for a minute, and when we come back, we'll have John Heffron on.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
Well, we're back. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and our guest today has been Topher Morrison, and we've been talking about his book, Stop Chasing Perfection and Settle for Excellence. You can learn more about Topher by going to tophermorrison.com. That's T-O-P-H-E-R, morrison.com. Or you can get the book and learn more about it at settleforexcellence.com. We've been talking about his book, but he's got a lot of stuff going on, including a workshop, which he does with funny man John Heffron, who was supposed to be traveling today and probably still is, but if he's got a moment, he's going to be calling in. And let me tell you a little bit about him if you don't know about him. He not only won the second season of NBC's Last Comic Standing, but was also a finalist in the subsequent season of NBC's Last Comic Standing. Heffron's amusing and extensive material has earned him two separate half-hour specials on the hit stand-up show Comedy Central Presents, and he has become a regular on numerous VH1 satire series. He has made numerous appearances on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, The Late Show with Craig Kilborn, and E's Chelsea Lately, and 101 Craziest TV Moments. He's a very funny man and a very real man, and he is on with us now. Please welcome to the show, John Heffron.
Well, thank you so much. And you know what? From you reading my bio, now you've convinced me I have to call somebody and make some changes.
Okay, because other things have happened.
Well, here's the deal. Like, so I think I could leave it off that I actually won Last Comic Standing, you know, back in 1972. I don't know if it's necessary if we say, and he came in subsequently the second season. You know what I mean? Like, that's one of those things, as you're saying out loud, like, unnecessary. Whoever wrote that for me doesn't need to say that. So perfect. But I appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate you being on, and actually, you know that Topher's on with us right now, too.
Yes, I heard him last.
Yeah, John, actually, that was the first time I've heard your bio, so now I know a little bit more about you, and I'm actually wondering if you can hook me up with Chelsea Lately.
Yes. I don't know if I would do that to anybody.
You all are both very funny. Actually, just having one of you on the show would have made this show fantastic.
Oh, you're going to lose control, Filippo. You might as well just go take a break now. Forget it. Yeah. We're overtaking the radio.
Well, good. Actually, I'm glad because I could just sit back and enjoy the two of you like I did at the Is Money workshop. John, I didn't expect you to take take on the role that you did. I mean, you went from funny man to actually helping people be funny themselves, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a new thing. It's just, you know, as a stand-up, I've been doing stand-up traveling every week for 20-some years. And then, you know, during that time, sometimes you have a shift. Sometimes you go, okay, I really like doing this, but, you know, I wonder if there's something else I would really like to do. And, you know, I got into NLP and all this kind of self-development stuff just on my own personal quest. I wasn't being as effective as I wanted to be. I'm like, okay, is there a way I can kind of figure things out? And as I did, then I kind of put that aside. I went, okay, I like that old personal development stuff, but I like it, you know, to contain it that I'm only kind of, you know, telling myself that stuff. But is there a way to kind of teach people just to get out of their head when they get on stage and da da da? And that all of that crazy thinking turned into the Funny as Money live event that you saw. So it was kind of, I took a left, then I took a right, then I drove, then I took another big swing back around. That's how that happened.
And such is life. And actually, that's how the two of you met, right? You met Topher by going to his legacy program?
No, we met at a strip club, but we thought, there's some things.
And the whole time I was like, are you sure you're not a guy? And he's like, no. And then he started using some of his hypnotic thing. He's like, what is it about you that all you see is men? Like, and then I started questioning myself. It was the whole thing. Yeah. I went to his, I was familiar with Topher's products that he has, just online, just on signing up for a guy that knows mailing lists and buying some of his products. Topher has the Game of Life I purchased, and then he has a verbal Aikido program that I loved. And then through that, you know, I got on his stuff and then decided to take time out of my, you know, I travel every week, and he's got a speaker training, Legacy, that takes place over roughly at the time I was there. I don't know if he's changing, but it was about a week and a half or so. And I blocked out all my time and decided to just go and do it. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was funny, you know, I had so many people asking me why the heck John was going to a speaker training course. Like, why the hell is he signing up for your speaker training course? And I kept telling people, I said, well, because it's different than comedy, you know? And it's like to think that a comedian could get up and do, you know, professional speaking makes about as much sense as me thinking I could get up and do comedy just because I'm funny once in a while. There's an art and a science to it. Just like there's an art and a science to speaking as well. And John was one of the few people that I've ever met that really walked in with such an open mind where he's like, yeah, I've been speaking professionally for 20 years in comedy, but I'm going to come in with an open slate and just learn. And he was really, it was such a joy having him at the event. And also it was hilarious too, because he just was able to just kill it with the comedy and teach people, you know, how to make their presentations funnier. And that was kind of the inspiration behind coming up with Funny as Money, because I was able to watch this guy do this with the other participants and then, you know, on the fly, come up with the jokes. And then as the weeks went by, he developed this system for creating and writing jokes, which he's now synthesized and we put into Funny as Money.
And you know, that's one of the things that I got from sitting there watching other people experience this, that they wanted to be funny. So many people wanted to be funny, but they just didn't know how. So first of all, Topher, when you got up there and put them at ease by saying, you know, if you just stand here, you'll be okay doing it this way. And then, John, you said, you know, if you think about it, this aspect of your life is actually pretty funny. And people already kind of go there in their mind. So why don't you go there? Just go there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, there's a lot of stand-up comedy classes that comics teach. You know, like, hey, come learn how to be stand-up. And the biggest thing within the comedy world is you can't teach people how to be funny. That's, you're just taking money from them, because that's not teachable. That's a skill you're born with. And I don't subscribe to that. It's just a matter of convincing people in their own voice, in their own way, how to find the stories in their life and then just repeat them is really all it is. It's everybody's funny to everybody in their own group of people. You know, there's even the most boringest guy sitting in some crazy computer lab says something that none of us would ever understand and makes that other computer lab guy laugh. So it's about just learning how to be funny in the environment that you happen to be in, using your own voice. That's another thing that a lot of stand-up right. people try to teach is, oh, do this joke technique. Just and that's where you get. Where people get in a little bit of trouble, where when I just teach you how to just recall a story that happened when you were traveling with your parents, that's what makes anybody fun.
Right. You know, actually, it reminds me when I first started working for IBM and I was trying to make sales the way my manager at the time was telling me I should do it. Finally, the top salesman in the branch pulled me aside saying, you're never going to make a sale if you keep doing it the way he does it, because it's not you. It's not your voice. And that's exactly what you were saying, is like, you got to find your voice. Well, as soon as I found my voice as a salesman, I made my first sale on the first day.
Yeah, I was doing, you know, in the few times I've done other stuff besides this, I was always trying to just repeat what the other people were doing. And then I failed miserably at every little side project that I've ever done. When I tried not to be, I don't know if I'm going to be talking third person here, but when I tried not to be John Heffern, that's when I was completely not successful. When I Heffern'd it up and I mumbled my way and didn't always have a clear thought, and I would just use my sense of humor that I've had since I was born, it's always worked out a trillion times better.
That is saying so much there. That is saying so much. Topher, a little off topic here, but what was it like having John in your class, in your workshop?
It was fun and intimidating and as hell at the same time, because
You know, I've been teaching these speaker training programs for years, right? And one of the things that I always put in there is I help them with their comedy, you know? So, you know, I'll think of something funny to say, and then I'll go, you know, maybe if you say it this way, you get a little bit of a laugh. And I'm always really confident about that. And now all of a sudden I've got this award-winning stand-up comedian who's, you know, had specials on Comedy Central, you know, and he's this famous guy, and he's sitting in the room. And then he's talking, and I'm like, okay, well, what are the rules with this guy now? Am I supposed to tell him, hey, if you say it this way, it might be a little bit funnier? And it was funny. I think for the first week, I think I started almost all my feedback with him with, like, an apology. It's like, okay, well, I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you this or not, John, but, you know, and then finally after about a week, I got it. He was just like, no, man, just give it to me. Just give it to me. And he was he made it easy to where he just was so open and receptive to it. But I will tell you, it was a little bit intimidating in the beginning to talk to a professional comedian and then also come up with things where he might want to try saying it a little bit differently here or differently there. And it was weird, but it was a really great experience, and it stretched me as well. And what it did for me is it also helped me realize the principles of comedy in a business environment. You know, it's so funny. John was talking about how there's loads of comedians who have comedy workshops and teach people how to be funny. And the reality is most of the techniques that they teach these people are stand-up comedy techniques, which are going to be useless when they get back to the boardroom, or they're going to be useless when they're trying to do a sales pitch. And what I loved about John was we were able to really kind of find this happy medium to where he knows what works in not just stand-up comedy, but also because he's been in the personal development movement. He's been in the, you know, and he does a lot. Like, he does a lot of comedy for corporations after conventions and stuff like that. And he was able to really synthesize that and say, okay, yeah, this might be a comedy technique, but it's only going to work for a stand-up comic. You try it this way, and that's going to kill when you're making your sales presentation. And it was really cool. So that was it was great. It was a hell of a fun experience, that's for sure. But I think it was kind of cool for him because he was the only American at the event. Everybody else was from the UK, so it was a nice break for him to not have to be the celebrity guy, but just be able to sit there and not get that kind of, that celebrity worship that sometimes comes with fame out in any country.
I bet John walked away with an accent.
Yeah, I did.
Did you have a British accent, John?
Yeah, I did. I noticed towards the end of the week, I would do a high pitch at the end of almost every sentence, I would say. Like, you know, or I would start to phrase it like all the UK, like, I look at Topher, are you going to eat? Like, I would throw that out of the blue, you know? Like, then I just sounded like that kid asking for more porridge in the beginning, you know? Please, sir. Come on. Yeah, so I did notice I started picking up that. You know, to backtrack just one quick second, as a comic, you're constantly getting, if you like the guys around you, it really actually depends on how friendly you are. But comics will always sit in the back, and they always say, hey, do you mind if I give you a tag? Do you mind if I give you some suggestions? And it's funny how some comics go, nah, I'm good. You can give it to me, but I won't use it. And then there's other comics that go, oh, that would be great. I never thought of it that way. And usually those comics are the ones that I think are the most successful and funny. I just, you know, learned early on, like even as an open micer, I think I was at an open mic in Tim Allen before Tim Allen was Tim Allen. Said, you know what, you change that word, you're probably going to get a bigger laugh, and then just walked away. Didn't put it, do you mind if I just kind of said it, and I changed it, and, you know, I'm like, wow, that guy just did some work for me. That was hilarious. So I've always been open to, I'm inherently lazy. So if somebody wants to show me an easier, more effective way to do something, then I'm all for it. And one of the things, you know, that I took a lot from Topher's legacy is even on stage now, I don't know, it's been a month or two since I've been there, time all kind of gets garbled with me, but on stage now I'm using, you know, it's like a muscle, you have to, more use it, the more it's in body, but using a lot of the techniques that Topher showed that I think now is making some of my jokes funnier. Even if it's the same joke I've been telling for a while or the same story, it adds this whole other crazy layer that maybe is not completely noticeable on a surface, but overall, it's like when you're listening to music, you know, when you listen to like some of your favorite songs, sometimes you hear like, I didn't even know that drum beat was there. How long has that been there? Or you hear like a saxophone part that you've never paid attention to.
Right.
But as a whole, when you first heard the whole song, you're like, this song's awesome. And then the more you get into the song.
Did we lose him? Topher, you there?
I'm still here. But I do a pretty good John Heffron imitation. So if you lost him, I'll just keep going. I can mumble just like him.
And you memorized all his jokes. Actually, it's funny because this would be the time that we would normally break to for a commercial and all that, but we're not going to. I'm just having way too much fun with all of you. And we normally break out into a whole other segment, which I'm going to ignore too because we're just having way too much fun. Let's see if that's John trying to come back here. Okay, he's back. Let me just mention, since we're not going to go to commercial, that we are talking to Topher Morrison and John Heffron. You can learn more about them at TopherMorrison.com. That's TopherMorrison.com and JohnHeffron.com. John H H. I'm being British now. John H F F R O N.com. Might I have some more? That's JohnHeffron.com. And of course, this is Filippo on Life Changes with Filippo, spelled F like Frank, ILIPPO.com. That's our quick commercial right there. You know, John, you had us, or you had me laughing at some of the things that you do over the years, the dangerous thing parents let us do, or your wife's computer, or how to wear a hat, you know, your fake sleeping routine. I love all that stuff, and I laugh, and I enjoy you, and I liked you already. But when I saw you at this workshop, Funny as Money, oh, I didn't mention that. FunnyIsMoneyLive.com is the workshop we've been talking about that Topher and John do together, and they're going to be doing it throughout the country at a comedy club near you. John, when you mentioned a story about your mom at that workshop, you had me in tears for another reason, and I just wonder if we have a few minutes, if you would be so kind as to grace us with that story.
Yeah, it was one of the story that actually came up with that Topher's Legacy, where he did a program. He lists a bunch of stuff, and you kind of almost improvise a story to show some of the techniques. And one of my things when I was at his thing, you know, my crutch is my stand-up. Like, I can get out of almost any situation using my humor. I know that pacing. What's really uncomfortable for me is actual to get real with people, or just to have a real conversation with pauses and some of that kind of awkward silence that's not awkward to other people, but as a stand-up, when you're used to getting laughs every 3 seconds, sometimes even a drink of water pause, for me, I'm not comfortable hanging in that space. So we were talking about kind of like life-changing experiences, and I shared with everybody, it was my mom was passing away, and we were going to take her to the hospice. And my mom was really, really big on spending a lot of money all the time. She had a great job and was really successful, but it really, you know, she was paycheck by paycheck because she liked to buy stuff. And so we're taking her to the hospice, and as we're taking her to the hospice, I had to grab some of her stuff. I had little to zero experience packing up a parent to go to basically have them die. So I was grabbing stuff I know I didn't need, and then I grabbed my mom's purse, and then the hospice lady's like, well, she's not going to need that. And then for some reason, now I'm thinking, why does the hospice lady get to say? Like, my brain was literally zapped like it's never been zapped before. I couldn't make a simple decision. So I'm like, well, I'm gonna bring my mom's purse, because that's the one thing in life is always, where's my purse? I lost my purse. Bring my purse. So I'm like, so I grab that, hand it to her, my mom's cousin. He goes, she's not going to need this, and sets it down. Now I'm getting upset because my mom can't bring her purse with her. So then I grab a pair of really bad sweatpants and a 12-pack of root beer. And at the time, my mom was making root beer floats when you take ice cream and root beer and blend it, like, right, almost every hour. I don't know that's a thing when, and you're towards the end where you just enjoy root beer and ice cream. If so, that's a good way to go. But so I grabbed this whole pack of root beer. And as I was walking outside with her, I looked at my hand and then I realized all my mom's work, everything she did just to have material things, turned out to be just a pair of bad sweatpants and a 12-pack of root beer. I was holding her entire shucking and jiving. Well, if I open up this credit card, I do this, I do that, laying in bed, stressed about, oh, how am I going to make this payment? Literally came down to her sitting in a car not knowing any of this is going on, and wow, me having a pair of sweatpants and a 12-pack root beer. And then I kind of realized, because I was going down my mom's same path, I really enjoyed stuff. And then I had a little bit of a shift and realized I'm no longer spending money on stuff. I'm going to spend money on experiences, because if it ends up that I'm sitting in a back of a car, not really knowing what's going on in the present, I guarantee you I'll have the memories of all the experiences that I spent. And if I have kids, or I don't want to put anybody in that situation to figure out, wait, does John want his iPad 24 or do I bring his leather jacket? I don't want anybody to ever have to make that decision again. So now I've kicked it to where I save money and I do things with people, because no matter what, that's going with me. If I'm laying in a hospital gown in a hospital, all of that is still with me, and I don't have to leave an apartment behind. And that's one of the reasons why I signed up for, Topher's Legacy. It was an experience. I didn't know what was going to come out of it. I had no idea. It was kind of inconvenient to take 2 weeks out of my life and to, spend the money. And I could name 8,000 different reasons why it was inconvenient and I shouldn't do it. And I did it, and I'm a better guy because of it. And then it turned into the Funniest Money Live program. I'm a better communicator. I'm a better speaker. So even if I just only did stand up for the rest of my life, that's in hand. That's my mom's story.
Well, John, thank you for sharing that story and giving us the experience of not only you being on this show, but getting us to think. And that's exactly what this show's about. And that major life change that you are helping other people have in their life, too, that they could stop and think, I never thought of it that way. And we usually don't talk about those kinds of things. So coming from a comedian and coming from somebody who we look up to and admire and say, oh, yeah, he's made it kind of thing, for you to say that really makes an impact. And so I'd like to say I hope to see this in your stand-up, because in the first part of that story, there could be a lot of funny there, and I think this is what can develop from that and what maybe John is encouraging. John, am I right about that?
Yeah, it's one of those, it's such a simple non, even each time I repeat the story, which is now is only like two or three times, I always kind of think about it afterwards, and I was on my flight yesterday flying to Chicago, and it was, my whole act is built on memories. Remember when you traveled with your parents? Remember when you, and I've made a career of that. And I just realized I have little to zero jokes about, remember when your parents bought this? I mean, actually, I do, but it's funny. But my own personal life, I don't even remember, some of the stuff I got for Christmas or some of the stuff I got maybe for a birthday or that thing I really wanted. But I do have vivid memories of every event I went with my dad and my mom, or just, right, as a kid when I went go-karting or we went and played paintball. Like, I have those memories. And so that's what I'm trying to do with my family, where I'm like, let's chill on the stuff and let's go experience some things together.
Excellent. Topher, that aligns so perfectly with everything you were saying at the beginning of the show, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like we should be a good team. We should do something together, John.
Yeah, let's.
Wait, I have an idea. Call it Funny as Money.
Now, yeah, we're right? Thinking.
Okay,
we can do it at comedy clubs, and we can bring corporate America into the improv. It'd be great.
All right, so funnyismoneylive.com. When's the next one?
We've got a lot of them kind of just like all in the works, so we're always interested in making sure people go check us out, send us an email and say, hey, would you bring Funny as Money live to my city? Because
the more requests we get, the easier it is for us to just call up the improv and say, hey, man, we've got like 500 people that want to have this workshop. Let's get it booked. So we do them all over. We're actually, next one's in Chicago, and then we're kind of wide open at that time. And then who knows where we're going to be from there. So just get on our mailing list, and we'll keep you in touch when we get out there.
And they do that at funniestmoneylive.com?
They can go there. They can go to tophermorson.com. They can even go. We've even created a fan page on Facebook, so you can go Facebook.com/funniestmoneylive as well. So we've got all, you know, they can't not find us. If they have a computer and a finger and they can punch in John or my name, they're going to be able to find us. It's pretty easy.
Well, after all that, we've gone through the commercials here and getting everybody to find you all and asked for your workshop to be in their city. I want to give you both 30 seconds to say something to each other or to me or to us as we say goodbye here.
Awkward. John, I just want to let you know I really love you. You're a great guy and I'm really glad that you're my friend now.
I'm glad I was able to create this moment.
Yeah.
Thank God. Thank God we're not in person. We'd have one of them awkward man hugs, and somebody probably video it and put it up on YouTube.
Yeah, well, and I just use the technique Topher taught me, where sometimes when people are saying stuff, it's best to sit back and say nothing and just ride out the time, and that's exactly what I did. So.
All right. Well, now it's time
to
say goodbye.
On the radio, I really appreciate it. By the way, this is really a great experience. It was fun, and how cool of you to let us on a second chance after I completely forgot to get on the radio the first time. That was great.
As Shakespeare would say, "All is well that ends well." And actually, I'm glad this happened the way it did. And if that was the way it's supposed to be, then life changes, and here we are. And thank you both for one of my favorite shows ever.
Cool. Our pleasure.
This was
all right, buddy.
All right, thanks to you. Thank you, Topher Morrison and John Efron. Y'all take care now. Have a great day.
Cheers.
Thanks, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, everyone, this brings us to the end of another great episode of Life Changes with Filippo. It has been my pleasure having those two gentlemen as guests on the show and having you all be part of this. On behalf of Dorothy Donahue, our producer, and Mark Lejeune, our producer, and myself, I am Filippo Voltaggio, thanking you for being part of this beautiful world, part of the beautiful positive changes we all wish to see in the world, and part of our show. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Change, change, change.